from our dusty cellars, thinking that if you've got time to say with the quickness rather than quickly or now, you obviously aren't in as much of a hurry as you'd like us to think. It's the final countdown, and I'm Manus Cronin, the guy who brought
Hi,
you that
Manus.
joke.
Hi, Manus.
Hi, kids.
I
You'd be
never
really
say hi to
funny.
Manus.
It'd be really funny if we did like a kids show, but it'd be rude. Whoa,
Oh, you're gonna
rude.
have
I can't tell you.
a second bomb or something.
Oh man, this is class. Messers is what yous are. Joining us this week, as always, like a moth on a nun's clothing, he is a creature of habit. Gavin Carberry.
Yes, I am. That's why I keep
Brilliant.
coming back to this show.
For the smooth intros that we have going on here. He likes to go on Pornhub and then masturbate. Jack Toner!
Who gave you an early edition of my autobiography?
He likes to go on Pornhub and masturbate beforehand because he wants to know what he was missing. James Belfast.
I watch it for the plot.
Yeah, it's the only way you can prove it. You can't upload a real-time video of like finish before you go on. And it's like, ah, oh, finally, clear mind to enjoy this porn.
That's a great way of being like, hey, were you watching porn? I swear to God, ask me anything about it. Ask me anything about the plot, and I won't know. So obviously, I wasn't watching.
You see, the fan culture machine room is all one big cinematic universe, and then trying to have to piece it together. It's like the MCU, but bigger and hornier.
And the MCU is already pretty
Yeah.
horny.
It's like, oh, this guy, I thought he was a
It's
plumber.
pretty horny, all
He's an
right. Have you
estate
seen
agent,
Salt and
so.
Pepper Hulk? Bareback me.
Salt and Pepper Hulk is barebacking.
They need to bring back the plot because the absence of plot in most pornographic films now has just resulted in way more. Nobody just gives a
Fake
blowjob
incest.
anymore. They're fucking crying from like fitting as much in there. I mean, Jesus.
I want to see someone not struggle to maintain an erection. I don't want to see someone actually struggle to remember their lines.
Don't know, man. I want them to remember that. I want there to be lines. It's like you can't like. There's stuff they do now that I think if they had to remember lines, they couldn't do it anymore. And I think, frankly, world would be better, you know. Were we any less happy when someone like came around to deliver a pizza and then they had sex in the video? Was that worse?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so. But like, yeah, I don't know. It
We may
yeah,
be
it gave
done
a
for.
veneer of respectability, but I get what you mean,
As a
Manus. Like,
generation,
whereas.
we may be screwed. Okay, it may be just that we're decent, but we can resensitize our children to like be more into like fairly banal things. I think the world would be a better place.
So we should make our children watch regular porn
Yeah.
so they'll stay away from the hardcore stuff.
This is the story I am going with. Yes.
Vote Manus.
If you give your
Porn for
kids a little
some.
bit of red wine, they won't, you know, at the dinner table, they won't be drinking in
How
the
many
fields,
problem
you know.
drinkers are there
Give
in
your kids
France?
a little bit of porn.
Yeah, just get them from an early age so they learn to respect
Jesus.
it.
This,
There was a good point in there before we turned it into whatever that was.
And now that was so
Subtitle for
bad,
this
it's
show.
actually making me think, was
Was there?
there? I just want us to tone down. I want us to tone down pornography going forward. I want us to reverse
Okay,
the trend
yeah.
of it just consistently getting more like, just like, why would anyone know stuff that people wouldn't do in real life, you know, or very few would.
But is that
Yeah,
not the
yeah.
point? Like,
Yeah,
why do you,
all
you
porn
could
stuff
look
that
at
we're watching,
nobody.
you
I don't
people
want to watch
do
a
in real
movie.
life.
But I don't want to watch a movie that's about fucking everyday shit all the time.
I don't bang
Sometimes
the
you want to watch
pizza delivery
superheroes.
boy in real life either.
Well,
That
sometimes
was
you want to
fairly
watch superheroes.
unrealistic. That was fairly unrealistic back in the day.
That's true.
You know? So I think we'd be fine with it. I don't think we were any less happy. I don't think we're even more happy that the pictures move. I think we were happier when it was magazines, frankly.
This ties into the TV not recommendation I quite gave a couple of weeks ago, where I was watching basically like the next thing the writer of The Wire wrote called Deuce.
Yeah.
It really finds its feet in the second season and it finishes after three seasons. And they've gotten to the bit where they're all just filming porn now. And like the first season ends with Deep Throat coming out and then all the hookers get into porn and it's great crack. It's become much more of a romp. And I chose my word very carefully.
I'm
big on porn right now is what I'm saying. But you know, the full length feature stuff you need to watch in a theater.
There was a while there where everyone who sold their story to a tabloid had some sort of romp with a royal, you know?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, romp.
Only royals have romp.
Yeah, there was there is a royal office for that as well, the royal romp, as they say. Before we get into what's on the agenda, Jesus, I mean, Gavin had a fairly insignificant birthday.
Yeah, no, we're not going to talk about that. Jack won four game recommendations and you read a book. Like a nerd.
Yeah, yeah. Like a complete dweeb.
What a nerdy show.
Board games of books, what have we become? Board game.
Before we get into that.
Threw his virginity over the weekend as well.
Probably, I'd say. Same. You all have beers. What are they? Tell us about them.
Oh, let me get it.
Oh, it's Thornbridge Ice Cream Porter Salted Caramel.
Wow.
Yeah, that's as craft beery as you get.
Yeah, and my first impression of this, just from looking at the can and reading it, is this beer is going to be a disappointment.
Yeah, this beer needs to calm down.
It is promising a lot, and you just know it won't deliver.
Yeah.
The uproar I certainly remember like when Alco Pops came around first, and the uproar, the hand-wringing and think of the children thing.
Yeah.
When I think it was Woody's was the first one to come into Ireland, certainly the first one I remember. Like it was trying to get children into drinking. Now we just have, this one has ice cream in it.
Yeah. It's a milkshake. That is such a good point.
No, this is craft though, so it's fine.
But this is craft, yeah.
This is expensive. It's like.
But is this another example of alcoholism classism? Like, because Alco Pops were like a euro each, whereas this costs you €3, and therefore it's classy. You know, you can make it taste like ice cream because it's for rich people.
Yeah, I mean, you can dress it up loads of ways, and people do. All the time, and you talk about vulnerable people and communities ravaged and stuff, but they're just blowing wind past the turd, which is alcohol related classism. I mean, it's what it is.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's lots more of them, I reckon.
Oh, definitely.
A lot of the cheap alcohol, woe betide, woe everything, is that. And efforts to restrict it are largely efforts to just go, well, make sure that the hopeless booze hand pisses away more of their salary on whatever they're drinking. I mean,
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to think we could have a conversation without it rearing its head, but I've yet to see it on a national level anyway. That criticism aside, enjoy your cake, boys. What have you got? Yeah. I mean,
oh, yeah, this tastes great.
What I will say is this Alco Pop is delicious.
But nothing about that name sounded unusual.
Problems. It is very nice.
How strong is it?
It's not that strong. It's like 4.5.
And like, yeah, like contains lactose. I assume it's lactobacillus as part of the what you call it, as part of the kind of brewing process. But yeah, it does give it a nice mouthfeel, great body, great. Yeah, it's got a dairy quality to it, which is what you want from like a salted caramel ice cream porter. And it's more substantial than a lot of porters, which I tend to find a bit weak. And in terms of flavor, yeah, it's caramelly, malty, sweet. I'm a big fan.
It's got a real coffee.
Might get sickly.
Big time. It's got a real coffee hit to it as well. Like it actually reminds me most of like a espresso martini or something like that. because it's really smooth. That's the thing that's getting me. Like, I poured it out and I was like, there's zero head at all. I should have had something tip of the tongue. I was going to say, it's like my relationship.
Probably.
Yeah, but I was like, I can't lie on air.
Whoa! Could he say that?
Wait, he can't lie on air. So all of the things that he has said previously, he has meant.
Yeah, all 100% true. Are we not truthful right now?
Welcome to the Final Countdown Children's Show. Blowjobs. We should take this on the road. Did nobody thought of this?
We tried, and then we blamed the sound quality for people not laughing.
Do an improvised musical version of it as well, I think would be a really good move. I think people would really dig it. We'd be the first ones.
I think the concept would last an hour, you know. Probably an hour and a half.
Oh yeah. You'd be cutting down to get it to an hour and a half, really. There's a lot in that.
And who at the time?
Writes itself. We could involve a lot of AV just to make it easier for us. AV integration is the buzzword of 2012. James, if this is as coffee-ish as Jack suggests, or you're right in thinking this isn't up your alley?
I'm not sure yet. It's really interesting. It's because there's a few different things going on. The first big hit you get is of coffee, which not my favorite, but then you do get the sort of salted caramel ice cream does come after that. It is present. It's really nice. I feel like it's got a lot going for it, but maybe it's not the most well-balanced beer in terms of flavor. You've got the big coffee up front, which kind of distracts from what is really nice underneath. So maybe it could do with a bit more sort of toning down some of it and raising up the rest. But yeah, I'll have to wait and see exactly how I feel about it. But it's a very interesting beer.
Yeah, I'm not getting coffee as much as you guys are, but now that you mention, I kind of am, and it does remind me of like a delicious iced coffee that you get on holiday somewhere, and all you can think while you drink it is, I'd never get this at home. I would just never get this at home.
Coffee is one of those flavors that
like buying a Mythos beer or.
Oh yeah. Did you ever get one of those holiday beers like when you got home? Like, oh, gotta get some San Miguel. Remind me of
gotta get some Estrella. Yeah.
And Mythos was one of the ones that they had. They actually had it in Lidl for a while. I got some. It's like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
Your memory is so pleasant of it.
Sorry, Matt, as I interrupted there.
No, that's fine. I think I was just going to say that coffee is one of those flavors that, like, if you like it, it can almost just be like, oh yes, and of course that is also in there. It kind of adds to it, but you'd never even think to mention it. Because if you don't, there are flavors like that. Coconut's another one, I think. Where it's just
that sweets? It was a type of sweet that had multiple flavors in it.
Revels.
Thank you. Yeah. And the ad for it was basically like. Basement Russian roulette game in Vietnam, and someone was like, oh, coffee. And they're like, but I like coffee. And they were all good. The fucking crowd goes wild. It tastes like coffee in a sweet. That's what it tastes like. It tastes like coffee as represented in candy bars.
Mm.
I really like it so far.
Yeah.
Taking a huge
also,
risk.
What a weird ad that was. Hey, a sixth of our product. Pasty. Shit. And you'll hate it.
Yeah, I don't know. Do a lot of people buy those? Can you still buy them?
I think I never would. But I never would like them all. If I wanted any of the things, I just buy the thing. And the things that you went for are like chocolate peanuts, Maltesers, and the Minstrels. Like those are the three big ones. And then you had like coffee orange, I think was one of them. Yeah, and maybe toffee. Like, so 2 out of 6 are kind of a bit shite. Although maybe...
Yeah,
like, I'm the kid who really likes the bounty. So, like, I get all the bounties in the box of celebrations. So I can pick and choose what I want at the start because I know I got a nice healthy set of bounty left at the end. So being the one person sharing this regular-sized bag of sweets who really is into coffee, it's fucking... That's Money City, baby.
But the problem and the difference there, Jack, is that Rebels, you could tell them all teasers, I guess, for the most part, because they were a different shape. But the idea was you couldn't tell what they were. So, like, if you want to leave the coffees, tough shit, you've already fucking got it in your mouth. You know?
And yeah, given that coffee and orange chocolate are such strong flavors, you kind of need to mentally prepare your taste buds for that. If you go in expecting an orange and you get a coffee, no matter how much you like coffee, you're not going to like that sweet.
Yeah, people must. I wonder if they just cost them nothing to make. Are they all cuts of something else? We put the rest in the Rebels, you know. I don't know where this supposed line manager in Cadbury's is, where he's from, but it does, it's not a good.
Yeah, it does seem like something like somewhere there's a big appetite for Revels, and they've just made all of them and shipped them to every market, despite the fact that it's only in Hungary that Revels, the national sweet.
They do seem like they'd be a tradition somewhere.
What's that thing in Canada that's all the flavors of crisp in one bag?
What? Is that poutine?
Yeah. No, poutine.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's most of the flavors. I mean.
There's a type of crisp. So Canada has this, has all the regular flavors of crisp plus a couple of fucking Canadian specials.
Moose.
It's probably
moose, James, to be fair.
They have this one that's actually all the flavor, a bunch of flavors just thrown into the same bag. So you pick it up and you don't know which crisp you're getting.
Well, you do know what crisp you're getting. You're getting the crisp with all the flavor because that dust is just going to fall off. Adhered to them crisps tightly as it should be.
Well, we have some of the weirdest flavors as far as the world is concerned of crisps. I mean, Americans get blown away by our crisps and what they
really?
Are.
like what?
Pickled onion and stuff.
Prawn cocktail.
Pickled onion crisp.
Yeah, prawn cocktail.
That's a weird thing to make crisp if you think about it.
I found it. It's called all dressed flavor. And it's a bag that combines independent chip flavors, barbecue, its own flavor, sour cream and onion, its own flavor, salt and vinegar, its own flavor, and ketchup, its own flavor.
Now,
yeah, that whole bag is tasting like salty barbecue.
Yeah. And I will say, you paused before ketchup because ketchup is a weird flavor. However, when you get on the ketchup crisp train, nothing will satisfy that hunger. I was in China and they had these weird tubular fried corn things that were ketchup flavored, and
like nachos that are wrapped into
that's disgusting. Oh. I'll just finish this bag, and then it was as though I had tasted human flesh and could not turn back.
They are made. I do know the crisps you're talking about. They are made with the crushed bones of political dissidents in China.
And the flavor comes through.
They don't sell them here, because we, when we crush the bones of our political dissidents, of course, make them into banshee bones.
They're way spookier than I thought. And I already thought they were pretty spooky.
Yeah. Because, as everyone knows, the banshee doesn't have bones. So
they have to acquire them somehow, yeah.
That's a little Soylent Green secret. It's Hawkey signed a contract in the 70s, and now that's what's in banshee bones.
You could say that a bit, if there's ever anything that doesn't make sense, just say the words "Hoggy signed a contract in the 70s and no one will ask any questions.
And now I guess that's what we do. Why do these people all stand still on the escalator? This is highly in a 70s
Hoggy signed a contract in the 70s
and now we have to just stand there in the middle of the escalator.
Why do you guys have pickled onion crisps? He signed a contract in the 70s.
Yeah.
That island wasn't going to buy itself, you know? He had his eyes on a bigger island, actually. I don't know that he just couldn't
find it. Ireland.
He was going to purchase. We were a country that, for a good part of our history, could have been bought by a supervillain for the right price, because we had sort of a sell the country to a supervillain T-shirt for a good while, you know? Oh, he would have signed a contract, I'm fairly sure.
Oh, after Colossus.
start carving a space into the mountain.
What island did Haughey own or try to buy?
I don't know what it's called now. He called it Inishfickalon. And you can imagine him fucking saying it too, can't you?
You surprise can, accent really got me.
Inishfickalon.
Now, Aidan Gillen, we need you to play Haughey, and this is going to be the first time a director has ever told you to do this, but we need you to tone it up. No, no, not a typo. This is not, that wasn't the internet cutting out. I need you to just go to where you'd normally go and fucking launch from there. Yeah? Are you sure I shouldn't maybe tone it down a touch? Move the eyebrows a little less. No, no, no. If anything, no,
you're almost there. You're almost in Haughey. Just a bit more.
I would love to see that.
I mean, they made it.
Wait, what? Aidan Gillen played Haughey?
I think so.
Yeah.
What? It's a bit of a random joke to bring up if it's not based on
it. I thought that was a joke.
Sorry, no, it would not.
We're talking about Haughey. Aidan Gillen's inherently ridiculous. What was this?
It was a three-part series starring Aidan Gillen as Charles Haughey and Tom Von Lawler as PJ Mara. Yeah, like it would like.
It was called Charlie.
I think it was just called Haughey, wasn't it?
Just called Charlie.
Yeah,
PJ, it's me, Charles, your Taoiseach and friend and confidant. Come over here at this cocktail party on my island. Wouldn't you say it's time to deregulate the banks?
Yeah.
You don't need to watch it now. You've seen it.
I only watched the first episode, but they couldn't really get in any plot or character development because all of the historical foreshadowing they were doing. Don't worry, deregulation of banks will never come back to bite us.
And Jackie, you went from not knowing this existed to having seen all of it.
You've seen all 3 hours in the last 45 seconds.
There is. You can watch it if you want, if you're a completist, but I'm just here to tell you, between the two of us, that's at least two episodes of it.
Surprising no one, Tom Von Lawler does a great job.
He's a great actor.
And then he's up against like rah, hi.
the most actor.
Yeah.
This is how you can tell I'm acting. That young Bertie fellow, keep an eye on him. I wanted to tell you about a baseball player.
Yeah.
Hey, Alice, who's the baseball player?
Rube Waddell, George Edward Waddell. You don't hear anyone called Rube anymore, really, do you?
No, you don't. And I think if in the beer community, if we shortened Ruben to Rube, he would not like that.
No, he wouldn't.
How's it going, old Rube?
Almost every, literally, it's nothing on him. Every beer person who's not the beer nut, like when we try and get informal and like give them nicknames and stuff, like, nah. No, we're going to be sticking with the name I told you I'm called. This isn't going to work. We're not going to be friends.
But the thing is, yeah. They say it explicitly. They say just that. They don't say like, nah, that's, they're like, no, we won't be going with Rube, you see. We'll be sticking with the Ruben we talked about previously.
I mean, to
how
be
could
honest,
the drunkest people in the country not have this much fun?
They're right and we're wrong. There's more of us here, so we're in something of an echo chamber. So
that's why we only talk to each other.
Yeah. Well, like, you know that, look, the people, there are about four people and we've met 40 who will talk to us and they're the ones who come on the show. So
10% is not a bad rate. At that rate, we could get 700 million interviews on this show.
Yeah, if only 1% of China listened to our podcast, if anything, grinding up the bones of political dissidents and putting them in their crisps, then we could do pretty well, you know. George Edward Waddell, Rube Waddell, pitcher with various different teams.
What's interesting
about him? He's best remembered for his highly eccentric behavior and being a remarkably dominant strikeout pitcher. I have to go pick some of these things out.
What brought this book on your radar?
This isn't a book. I was just researching you know, early 20th century baseball guys, and like they're all a bit
oh
mad.
Sorry yeah Monday yeah sorry
yeah Look, they're all a bit mad. There's like characters that people bemoan the loss of characters, and unless they lived in the day of Rube Waddell, they don't really know what they were missing. Grew up in the countryside, biographer Alan Levy wrote that, this is just from the Wikipedia page, there's probably more. He's a different sort of child. At the age of 3, he wandered over to a local fire station and stayed there for several days. He did not attend school very often, but was considered literate. He strengthened his arm as a child by throwing rocks at birds he encountered while working on his family's land.
It took so long for all of that sentence to hit me. First of all, he encountered these birds. Yeah. It was an encounter.
They encountered him. As much
it really
else.
Feels like so, he like, was laughing
really
a couple of rocks.
Attributing intent to that. It's like, they're really attributing intent. It's like, he strengthened his arm by throwing rocks at birds. It's like, no. He was throwing rocks at birds. And like, then he became a professional baseball player.
I was like, I hate to do this to you, birds, but I got to throw rocks at something. What for to strengthen my arm?
I like to think that is where the scouts found him. The guy just driving past and they're like, oh my God.
That kid's amazing. He's killed 14 bluefinches.
Silent.
He was notably unpredictable. Early in his career, he would often leave in the middle of a game to go fishing. He also had a long-standing fascination with fire trucks and had run off the field to chase after them during games on multiple occasions. He would disappear for months at a time during the off-season, and it was not known where he went until it was eventually discovered he had been wrestling alligators in a circus. And he was easily distracted by opposing fans who held up puppies, which caused him to run over to play with them, and shiny objects, which seemed to put him in a trance. An alcoholic for much of his short life. Might explain a bit. Waddell reportedly spent his entire first signing bonus on a drinking binge. His eccentric behavior led to constant battles with his managers and scuffled with bad-tempered teammates. Now, I could just read everything, but it will take forever, so I'm going to try to not.
Also, can be honest, describing his teammates as bad-tempered, it's pretty harsh on them. I think their temperament is pretty reasonable.
Oh, yeah. He sure got anyone who put up with him, God bless them. He goes around like loads of different teams. He keeps running off and joining various circuses. He just goes off to play minor league baseball, just fucks off and does that. Louisville ownership, blah 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 blah. This is him being good at baseball. He's apparently an incredible pitcher, a big strikeout pitcher at a ridiculously low earned run average. Yeah, he pitched semi-pro baseball in towns such as Punxsutawney and Milwaukee.
That's where Phil is from.
Punxsutawney Phil, yeah. Six more weeks of winter, folks.
Aww. We're only at the start of winter. Season. That's fine.
Shortly after the 1902 baseball season, reports indicated Waddell would play for the Philadelphia Athletics football team. However, he never played for the football team because he injured a guy called Wanamaker in the first practice, and they decided football wasn't for him.
He's either really
good. He injured someone else and they decided football wasn't for him.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy he was. He spent a brief period as a goalkeeper in the St. Louis Soccer League. Saved a woman from drowning and accidentally shot a friend through the hand. He was bitten by a lion. He toured the nation in a vaudeville play called The Stain of Guilt. His performance in The Stain of Guilt was notable in that his co-stars, who had realized that he was incapable of memorizing his lines, allowed him to improvise his lines for every show. And there was a scene in which he lifted an actor and threw him across the stage. The tiger getting bitten by a lion, that's got to be up there.
I presume that was
in the circus.
Yeah. To me, it pales in comparison to fascinated by fire engines to the point he would chase them when they pass.
That's the one that's really sticking with me. Is just he hears a ree, 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 yeah, in the middle of a baseball game and just pelts it for the fire engine.
And this guy's an athlete. He might have caught one or two.
Yeah, there's numerous, one of the first times I heard about him was in a lecture on early 20th century baseball, and yeah, the fire engine thing, it was all they could do to like not have him run out of the ground and chase the fire engine. If he heard it, that's what he would do.
And what if, like, I know that, like, what if he caught the fire engine? Does it explain what happens? Like, surely there's an instance where, like, the fire engine stops or something and he catches it. Like, what then?
Yeah. Great Chicago Fire is what happened then.
As he's holding fire trucks above his head.
And throwing them across the stage. Mixing up his jobs.
Burns later claimed that Waddell had lost track of how many women he had married. His increasingly erratic behavior included an incident in which he got into a fist fight on a cross-country train after making fun of a teammate's straw hat. James Fair reckoned he suffered from a developmental disability, which, you know...
He definitely did. Everything you just described are the actions of a child.
Yes.
Like being distracted by puppies and fire trucks.
And shiny objects.
I can't find it in the Wikipedia article, so it may not be true. But I read before that his roommate when he was playing for St. Louis insisted that a clause be put into Rube's contract forbidding him from eating crackers in bed. I don't quite know what level of cracker eating he must have been doing.
For that to become a contract clause, he has got to be doing some.
He has got to be cleaning them crackers.
Let me just. Maybe it was the pejorative. Yeah, okay, here. No, it is here.
just nibbling on bones.
Yeah, around this time, he was sharing a room with teammate Ozzy Schreckengost. As was customary during the era, Schreckengost later refused to share the room until a contract clause was created which would stop Waddell eating crackers in bed. He gained more fame for saving the lives of people inside a department store when he picked up a boiling stove and carried it out of the building. I'm not sure that that was saving anyone.
What was the problem there?
Stoves are... meant to boil things, right?
Maybe when he saved them from himself. He picked it up, and then by carrying it out of the building instead of simply dropping it because it was. I don't know. It doesn't go.
Yeah.
This one isn't.
The general attitude of the time. He walked in, and everyone in the building thought, "Okay, we've got a 50-50 chance of dying here." And then he left, and they were like, "Oh, thank God, we're saved."
He saved his teammate's life by being distracted by a fire truck while he was beating him to death.
There's no citation on the picking up the boiling stove, so when it's in there, but he published an advert in a newspaper in the Scranton Republican newspaper entitled "Unkissed Girl Sought by Rube Waddell." He's in the Baseball Hall of Fame, so...
He's in the Baseball Hall of Infamy. And it's got to be a bigger hall.
At a certain point, you start to think, like, did he just know that, like, at some point someone's going to write a biography of me? Better give him some stories.
I've gone onto the Wikipedia article, too, and there's one here in his final years that I'm... very disappointed there's not more detail given. Like, while in spring training, he helped save the city of Hickman, Kentucky from a devastating flood. How did he save a city from a flood?
He drank the river dry.
I don't know about this guy. He must have been incredibly good at baseball.
Yeah, like there's a lot of putting up with to be done here.
Like, certainly there's an element of it being a different time back then, and people were different. I mean, it's like over 100 years worth of a different time. But it seems his fellow players were sick of him at the time as well.
Do you have any idea how crazy you have to be the craziest baseball player in 1900-something?
But, although funny, the things that seem to be bothering them are, like, of all the stuff he did, they're bothered by, like, the crackers in bed. The morality of the time was apparently just like, you can do whatever you like, sir, but don't you dare eat any crackers in bed.
Purchase as many virgins as you please, but make sure you bring them to a clean bed that the club's paying for.
I mean, I guess if they were sharing the bed and he just wouldn't stop eating crackers.
Was he eating crackers in his sleep? Like, like an unconscious motion, just putting crackers in and chewing them.
I mean...
Also, Manus, I may need you to confirm this for me. On the second paragraph of the pitching style section, am I right in saying that this is more about his skill as a player? He liked to tell his teammates to leave the field and then single-handedly take on the opposition team and beat them.
Yeah, I think that sounds like something you would do barnstorming, I don't. Okay, according to this claims he did it in an official game at one point. Yeah, I mean...
If you really want to psych someone out and there's no, the bases are empty and you think that you can just get them to strike out, be like, hey guys, you can take this one off. This guy's striking out.
If you are as dominant a strikeout pitcher as he apparently was, keeping in mind that this was a very pitcher-friendly era anyway, I mean... Yeah, you could do, and keeping in mind how many games they play, if you do it and you fuck up, really, you know.
What's a game? Yeah.
What's a game, really, once it's not in the World Series or something? I don't think there was a World Series back then, but yeah, he seems to have done this all right, but yeah, you wouldn't do it now. I mean, you could imagine like a really dominant bail whipper offer, whatever they call someone like that in cricket, just a big fucking powerhouse of a bowler, I guess, could tell the rest of the team to fuck off and just keep knocking down the wooden sticks, however that works.
There's a man intimately familiar with the rules of cricket.
Yeah. There's several sticks involved. You stick them with some, there's other things aimed after, so, you know, tees had eventually.
Yeah, you're right.
Those are the rules.
That is objectively correct. This guy seems like an absolute delight. Has there been any, like, did Ken Burns include him in his baseball documentary?
Oh, he's in there. Yeah, for sure.
Gotta be in Ken there.
Yeah, he is. There is like that. Those are the best. Or those are the bits of any baseball documentary that, like, anything prior to about 1920 or 1930 is fun. Even if you're like most of the sensible world and don't like baseball, it's just like, it was crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And it didn't attract very stable people, and it didn't provide a very stable life. It wasn't a particularly well-paying job for a long old time until they, it's like a lot of sports where the earning power, like you could earn, you like make what a doctor makes. You know, you do all right. Like they put the
yeah. But then TV changes it because it makes
TV
you,
changes yeah. it. The death of the reserve clause, which is like sort of like what happened in football with the Bosmans. But
what's the reverse?
What's the reserve clause?
The reserve clause in baseball, which existed from the very first time that the association became of owners as opposed to of players. The original baseball associations were of players. The reserve clause reserved your services to the team with which you signed your first contract for the next year. And that had been interpreted by first the baseball commission, then the baseball commissioner when they had one, to mean in perpetuity. So but you would finish your contract and you would receive exactly one offer the next year from your current team, take it or leave it. So you couldn't negotiate Then I think Andy Messerschmidt and Kurt Flood, I could be wrong, might not have been Kurt Flood, might have been later. Anyway, they challenged it in binding arbitration and won. There's been back and forth. Now you're reserved for 8 years. So you play your first 8 years, or maybe it's six, anyway, with your team. And then after that, you can go into free agency. But yeah, it depressed wages to where basically the best players made about the equivalent of 100 grand a year in today's spending power.
Wow.
All the way throughout, no matter what. And yeah, it was just a way of keeping wages down. It was crazy. If you are inclined to do so, you can look at baseball just because it had such a long period of time. You can look at it just from industrial relations if you feel like it, and you don't have to look at a box score even once. There's enough in there, you know. You can look at it from race relations if you want. Yeah. And you don't ever have to look at a game. There's lots of stuff in it, but the game itself is one for the connoisseurs, I will grant you.
You mentioned the Bosman rule there for football. Yeah. Is that essentially the same thing as the reserve rule, or do you know what the Bosman rule is?
I don't know that much about what the Bosman rule was in the last year. I think we'll look it up afterwards. I think it was it's in the last year of your contract.
You can accept offers or look at offers from other teams.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can sign pre-contract agreements, and you have the right to go on a free transfer after it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the situation was before that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was it something like the reserve clause? Like, could you not negotiate until it was the end? Had you no right to go on a free? Could they sell? I don't know.
I think there was you still had to pay a transfer fee or something, even if the player's contract was over.
Interesting. Right. They have a thing in football called the franchise tag, where if someone is like a really, really key piece of your like marketing, basically, you can pay them an extra small amount of money, and you only get to do it for like a small number of your team, maybe three members of your team. And it just means you have to play for me. You're my quarterback. You have, like, we'll negotiate in good faith, but you have to play for me. You can't, no one else can bid on you.
And they have to go where they're drafted too. So that's like a double whammy, right?
They have to go where they're drafted. Yeah.
So you could, in theory, you're drafted to it. And that happens. You do see like arguments between players who don't want to play for their drafted. That's why Bo Jackson played baseball, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes they'll be like, drafted, I would like to announce my retirement from football, and I'll see you all in 6 months.
So in addition to drafting you, they can also, they have to pay for the privilege, but they can, I have a question about football actually, Jack, while I have you there, but I'll finish this point. Hit so it. they can also go, and this specific player, we're reserving you as our. And the league's fine with that because there's obviously some benefit to the league being that way, obviously.
Wait, say that again?
They can essentially reserve, they can put a version of a reserve clause on a player.
If your contract is about to end, they can say you're not allowed to go, you're only allowed to negotiate with us. Pretty much.
Now, I wanted to pull up the NFL standings and ask you a question about football, Jack. So if you are a divisional winner, do you automatically make the playoffs?
Yes. So there are two conferences that make up of 16 teams that together make up the NFL. Each conference has four divisions, North, South, East, and West. And the winner of each, which are just little league tables. And then the winner of each of those goes through to the playoffs, plus the next two best teams in each conference.
Okay, so my question is about the NFC East.
Yes, a team is currently winning 30% of their games and making the playoffs.
Yeah, the Philadelphia Eagles have won 3, lost 6, tied 1 for a winning percentage of 0.350. Two teams in the Detroit Lions and the San Francisco 49ers are on better records than them while being at the bottom of their division.
Yes.
So it's a magical sport. Out of the galactically shitty NFC East, one of those teams is going to fail the least.
Here's the magic of the NFL. The Eagles won the Super Bowl like 2 years ago.
That like, is, teams that fortune is incredible changes. That they can have such swings in
it's awesome.
Team yeah. quality.
It's unreal. It makes it genuinely exciting every year because you're just like, maybe they're going to be crap. Maybe they're just going to be really crap now.
What happens? What is happening when teams like the Detroit Lions have been shit for 60 years or 50 years?
Usually it's a combination of two things. Number one, a bad manager. So coaches change pretty quickly. Players change pretty quickly. But like your GM and your owner might just be bad at running a team. They might just make poor hiring decisions, have a real kind of like late fucking mediocre cultural approach. And that kind of permeates throughout everything and you end up a mediocre team. Bad management. And that means like up to the ownership level. The other one is, man, if you draft a couple of bad folks, you're actually fucked forever. Particularly if you're mediocre, because if you're mediocre, you never. It basically how it's how it works is if you're the worst team, you get the first pick that next year. So the worst team gets the first pick. If you come 32nd in the league, you get the first pick of all the players coming out of college, and that means great. I can maybe get my big franchise quarterback. The Lions have had a pretty good quarterback, who's never going to win them a Super Bowl. But is pretty good. He was also the highest paid quarterback for a long time there, and he wasn't even that great. So every team has a finite amount of money that they can spend. Every team gets the same amount to spend on salary. So if you spend it all on a quarterback who it turns out wasn't that great, but you gave a fucking 8-year deal, you're kind of shit out of luck for the next 7 years.
I know. And that,
you're never going to be bad enough question. To draft a new guy.
That answers another question about their contracts. I was under the impression that they were not no-cut contracts, that you could sign a quarterback for 8 years, but you could drop him whenever you like.
You can drop him, but you probably still have to pay him, and he'll still count towards your cap, your salary.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Would I also be right in thinking that the way the league is structured, the worst team in the league at the moment by a country mile would appear to be the New York Jets?
They are, they are running joke on television bad, yeah.
Would I be right in thinking the league is structured in such a way that no matter what happens, they're still going to make a profit?
Oh, yeah.
It's a money-making operation, not a football operation.
Here's the thing about football versus something like baseball. The sixth most expensive baseball team costs just under $2 billion. How many baseball teams are there, Manus? Pro, A-level, like major league?
Lots.
30, 40?
What's okay? There's five in a division. There is East, West, and Central in East. So there's like, let's say 60. It's not 60, but my maths is terrible. But 30. There's 30 anyway. There's definitely 30. 30.
Let's just say 30. In the NFL, the least expensive team of 32 teams costs more than $2 billion.
Yeah.
The sixth most expensive baseball team is cheaper than the least expensive football team. That's how limited, fucking mental football is.
There's limited incentive to get. Like, if you're last, you could really try very hard and maybe be fourth last. And there's limited incentive to do that. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much. Like the thing is, like, they actually share. It's America's finest socialist institution.
Yeah.
The person who does the worst gets the first pick. Everyone can only spend the same amount, and they pool a huge amount of their resources. Like, the league negotiates collectively for things like TV. So even if your team is shit, at some point you're going to play the Cowboys, so it doesn't matter. You're going to get on TV. So everyone gets paid pretty much no matter what. Like, there's even if no one shows up to your games, you're guaranteed to make profit, unless the uncapped salaries you have, or you make like crazy marketing spends. Like, unless you choose to spend insane amounts of money, you're making insane amounts of money.
I suppose that's kind of what they keep talking about doing in football, in soccer, I mean, with making a super league.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because you kind of have to have no relegation before that works, right? Before you can.
There is only one football league, and it's been the same for ages. The last expansion was 15 years ago or something.
But enough about the XFL. What about
hey, this just only this last week, the star player of the XFL finally got his run at the NFL and he fucking crushed it. So the audition ground that was the now owned by Dwayne The Rock Johnson Extreme Football League has turned out a couple of good players.
Wait, well, what, the Dwayne Johnson bought the XFL? I thought he was
he bought it. Yeah, he bought it off Vince McMahon.
He didn't have to pay very much for it.
Yeah, well, there's that. It's...
Yeah, COVID shut it down, and then I think they just like... Does anyone want to buy three banners?
Oh no, look what coronavirus did. My league failed. Oh no,
Oh, damn.
My formerly successful league. Even monsters need air, sir. My league! So that's enough about Rubot, yeah.
All right, go. I hope you're chasing fire engines in the sky.
For all of our listeners, when I say it's not enough about Rue Bondel, but it's enough for now.
It's all we have time for.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have started with him because, like, there's other crazy baseball guys. I'm not sure any of them are as nuts as he was. There's, like, even if you're 90% as nuts as Rube, if I'd started with like someone a bit nuts and built up to Rube, but I didn't. So there you go.
I still think there's plenty of crazy to mine in that, even if they're not as crazy as Rube. Bring another baseball player next week.
I'll find another whack job to have a talk about. Was someone reading a book?
No.
Both you. We thought you were reading a book, Manus.
Jack was looking for board game recommendations. I've got
hit it.
One board game. So obviously, like, you should get Heads Up and you should get Jackbox. Like, those are the family games that you want.
Those aren't board games.
They're not board games, but they provide the same function and they're better. now the board game that I would recommend is a cooperative board game. All right. Mm-hmm. So it's not competitive. All right. Good for the family, no fights. And yeah, it's called Samurai Spirit. It's based on the film Seven Samurai and the story of the Seven Samurai. Everyone, it's pretty complex to set up, but as soon as you get into it, really intuitive, really good. And I'd really recommend it. And also, just in general, cooperative board games instead of competitive board games, way great. Funner.
Really, really great.
Yeah,
I have had some great times with cooperative board games like You Versus the Game.
Pandemic,
a great classic. and timely classic. We played the Lord of the Rings board game, which is one of the more intense and stressful experiences I have ever had.
That's how we found out about Fatty Bulger. What he likes to do.
The fifth character they had to find to balance out the game.
Making his
comments. sounds like a good one. Some nice cooperatives.
Yeah, and also the artwork is really great. It's just really nice. It, like, it, as a package, it is like, you know, like board games come in this really like annoyingly large box. Mm-hmm. This one, nice little neat box, and like it looks really good. So like, both fun to play and looks great.
Fun to play and looks great, Jack. Have you considered either Snakes and Ladders or Ludo?
Boom. Now, something like Ludo actually seems... Wait, no, because aren't all those games just dice rolls? There's no decision making, right?
Well, the decision, which is the incorrect one, which is to play Ludo.
Yeah, that's it. It's ultimately just like, I roll the dice and then something happens. And ultimately, this game is predetermined based on...
Yeah.
Ice rolls.
Yeah. Mm. Are you looking for a good board game? Sorry.
Well, here's my thing. I wanna like you know, we're all gonna be cooped up for Christmas with you know, I plan on doing a lot of boozing around as the government allows when lockdown ends. But you know, when I'm home, wanna be spending some good quality time with the fam. And I feel like we've all done a lot of TV watching this year. So maybe it's time to mix it up and kick it old school with maybe something like a board game, but not something like something crap.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. I like that. Yeah. And another one, I got my sister for her birthday. We haven't played it yet, but it's called Chameleon, and it's essentially the game Codenames. So you're given a big sheet with a list of words, and you're given certain words which you have to like convey to your teammate. So like if I was given the words like horn, wing, you know, bell, blah, 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 I would say cow, and they'd be like, oh, these two words.
Yes, I have played this game. It's excellent.
It is. It's so tough to describe, but it's an excellent game. Chameleon is the board game equivalent of it, but Codename is the name of the actual game.
Yeah, yeah. Codenames is excellent. Here's let me come back to something you said just a minute ago, Gavin, about big boxes. So the current ones that man has heard it. He heard it. So I'm looking for a game that also potentially could transition into like getting a crew together and like playing it. Some people are like into it, which I think lends itself to a little bit more complexity, a little bit more of a commitment, and dare I say it, a little bit more outrageous, like high concept big box event. And it seems like the only show in town is what appears to be like Dungeons and Dragons in a box, but like Skyrim. Gloomhaven. It's Gloomhaven.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't Gloomhaven like €200 or something?
It's only £100.
It's, yeah, for me, it's still a lot for a board game. But yeah, no, I think that's, yeah, you're given different like adventures or different things.
Exactly. It's basically so it can be like a huge video game on paper. Yeah, yeah. You can play with like three or four people infinitely. Well, not infinitely, but there's probably more game than you'd ever want to play, yeah. And you don't have to play it all. You just get do whatever you want. Yeah. I have it loaded up on the screen to press buy now on Gloomhaven.
Would that be something your family would be into? I think Gloomhaven is a lot.
I think Gloomhaven is a lot, but I'm willing to roll the dice of them maybe starting to try it or rejecting it out of hand, which is why I have my second backup game, which is called Innis, which is like Risk kind of style. Like it's that like fighty overlandy type game, but it's all set in like ancient Ireland and is apparently like the best version of that thing. It's like one of the best little plastic people scrapping over hills type of game. And I think that might be like a nice middle ground. We have a couple of ones in the background. Codenames is one of the ones that, you know, is already in like the friend group pile of board games I might dip into. So is like Ticket to Ride and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you click buy now, Jack, though, because £200 or 100, whatever, a lot of money for a board game. Nintendo actually make a console where you hold these things in your hand, and when you move them, the screen, you can play like tennis, you can play golf, it can do a pretend boxing. It's called the Wii. The Nintendo Wii.
Wii. How do you spell that, Manus? I'm just going to write
W-I-I.
That down.
W-I-I.
Oh, yeah, like it sounds. Wii. The Wii.
Spell yeah, it like it sounds. W-I-I.
Literally, now I know what you're thinking. Computer game console. How am I going to fit the big stand-up arcade machine in my house?
Yeah, that's what I was.
You don't need to because this hooks up to your television. Which, what? Interestingly, before you press buy now on that board game, your television, when turned on, plays these like little plays on the television. I swear to God, it's like they're really happening. Jack, it's incredible. And they're on all the fucking time.
Oh, it's like you're in the room. So what? It's like a play. So it's what, like a 2.5 hour, you know, three people in a she bean in and they're arguing. It's like The Field. They're
it's
all
kind of
like
hard
that.
To describe.
The Field
hard
is one.
Describe.
Yes. Yeah. But there are other ones. Better.
There's other ones. What, like with different sets?
Different fields.
Different fields, wow. Ted, different sharks.
Wow.
So just you probably already have that one in your house. So just,
if you do end up playing Gloomhaven with your family, let us know how it goes. I'm just interested because, like,
Gloomhaven might be one for a non. Yeah, yeah.
He's already told us what the plan is. He's not even going to buy it.
You son of a bitch, man. It's because now I'm going to have to fucking spend all this money.
Oh, no.
Great.
Oh, now that someone's called me out, then I'll have to do it.
Yeah, that's how it works, man. You fucking know it's done. Great, it's actually done. I've just bought them both.
This is an unstoppable force meets an immovable object. There was a plan, but it also involved spending a lot of money. So,
I'm going no further than clicking a button as well. You know what? Yes, this is incredible. I think the universe might implode. Matter and antimatter are clashing.
Well, that's that done.
That's that done. You've been goaded into buying board games, Jack.
I think I just needed someone to talk me out of it, and that is not what happened here today.
So by talking you out of it, did that actually knock it into where it was possible again because you weren't intending on doing it and then suddenly you could do it? And there was a brief window where your finger could click the button and it was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to do this. Is that the key?
I don't know. I think the real proof in the pudding is actually not the purchasing of it. It's the playing of it.
It's the playing of it. Definitely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because that takes effort.
Yeah. It takes effort. It takes allocating a non-trivial amount of time. And you know what? It'll be the perfect antidote for what I imagine will be a fairly aggressive lockdown in a cold, wet, dreary January.
Yeah.
If they loosen things up enough in December, they won't need to lock down shit in January.
Because everyone will
we'll
be
all
dead.
Be dead.
Yeah, let us go buck wild in December. Nobody will have any money or health left. We'll be sitting there with those eye pillows over our eyes, nursing the hangover of all hangovers for a month. January doesn't have to be fucking ghost town, man.
Here's the thing about this upcoming December. It's going to be the lack of tolerance. I went for I had a couple of pints there the other night. I had like four Guinnesses or something. Guinness. I can't even pronounce it anymore. I'm that out of practice. And I had a bit of a hangover. And that's not a lot of Guinnesses.
Yeah. I had half a bottle of wine on Friday. I had a hangover on Saturday. I have crushed my tolerance. My tolerance is no more. But
so we should start
having
drinking.
I haven't had a drink since September, lads. It's going to go fucking crazy.
Whoa! Hello!
Have you actually not had a drink since September?
No, I'm on October. This is day 54.
Fucking fair play, man.
You look better.
And what day are you on in total? Your year target?
Oh, let me pull up my 2020 days list. I like pulling that up. 171 altogether for the year.
Unreal.
So, yeah, 54 in a row. 54.
What was the target?
100. I have to get to 183.
Not far off. That's less than 2 minutes.
Which the end of lockdown gets you to.
No, the end of lockdown only gets me to 179. Oh. But
then you just have to get to the Friday.
Yeah, exactly, which I've been doing midweeks anyway, so that shouldn't really be a problem.
That doesn't imply that you should then drink every remaining day of the year.
It's a bit of
an argument. Manus, is this the point at which the argument gets made that maybe 54 should become infinity days?
No, you can all you can all die in a fire. I'll reevaluate what the target is next year. But like, I've got to half the year, more than half the year this year, which, you know. What's the next step like to where it's like once a week or something, you know?
Or I think it's more context driven. For me, that was the thing where I only drink with other people.
What are you getting at? Like, do you know what I mean?
Getting at the root cause of drinking being social.
Yeah, if you do half the year, then that's kind of 3.5 days in a week. Then maybe it's 3 days a week.
Yeah,
and then maybe
you know.
It's 2 the year after.
Yeah, and I mean, like, yeah.
And by the time you're at two. Yeah, as soon as you've got two, that's how much everyone drinks, you know?
Yeah. No, this has been easier than I thought it would be. And I do have to thank that condescending bint on Twitter who was like, October, October.
We all
like, I'm gonna do sober October, November. I'm never drinking again because
the second I read it, I was like, oh, this isn't even gonna be hard.
Yeah.
This is gonna be easy. There's a little thing that happens in your brain which is, oh, this is gonna work. I don't know how it like it happens, and you can't always fake it.
You've got that Michael Jordan thing, Manus. Like someone just slighted you without even knowing it, and you were like,
and then I decided they wronged me, and so they like that.
I had to go.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's not where the similarities stop between me and Michael Jordan either. You know,
it's not. No. We don't have to talk about it on here.
Basketball
but,
skill.
Manus has amazing basketball skills, as Charlotte Regan will attest.
Yes, he will. He will attest to that. If he's willing to lie, he will attest to that.
Very proud of you, Manus. That's brilliant.
It is awesome.
Four contiguous days.
It's good. It's and I mean, I'll be doing January as well. So like, you know, it's, I think what I need to build in as well is more like this month is just a clear month. Because I think there's benefits that you don't get from just like 4 days in a row, 5 days in a row. You know, there's benefits to doing the month off frequently enough.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's how your liver works, is your liver like can go into overtime for like a whole month and just be like, get all this shit out, fellas.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't like if you're depending on what type of drinker you are as well, it depends on what you have to do. If you go on the Alcoholics Anonymous crew on the Reddit Stop Drinking subreddit are very irritating for what I'm trying to do at the moment. It's like, nope, even Monday, everyone's the same type as I am. And it's like, well, what happens if you get behind the wheel of a car and kill someone on one of your on days? They're going, yeah, just because you do that. One doesn't equal the most people. I think it's Americans. Most people don't drink and drive anymore, but I think they still do in America.
They still do in America.
The limit is way higher.
Yeah, watching RuPaul's Drag Race, every single queen in that thing has a DUI. But I don't know why.
I think the penalty is pretty low.
If you're entitled to drive, I guess it's the culture. If you drive everywhere, that's what you do. Then. Yeah.
Basically, the entire city of LA made the argument that the Healy Rays made, which was they have to drive to get to the pub. It's an important part of their life, so they should be allowed to drink and drive. LA is that decision, because it's just like, we don't breathalyze people unless you're fucking steaming, and the test to see if you're sober is like asking you, and if you say yes, we'll let it slide.
You have to be pretty darn bad. You basically have to crash.
You have to be causing a problem.
I'd like to start to see, because it'll start to come out now because of legal changes, I'd like to see start seeing stats for people just getting stoned and driving.
Oh yeah,
like what happens, because it intuitively feels like to me it wouldn't be as bad, but I'm not basing that on anything other than I sort of feel like it wouldn't. I don't
like
know
not wouldn't not as bad, but not like not bad.
Oh yeah, one like, shouldn't do it. It just I've never been able to find any. It's real hard to find stuff on like what happens in real life if it happens. You can find that where they put a guy in a car and they like under control conditions get him to drive around some cones or whatever. But I don't know. And I'd just be curious, because my instinct would be it wouldn't be as bad, but maybe it is. So
Anyway, congratulations, Manus. That's fucking. Way to hit the goal.
Don't congratulate me just yet. I haven't hit I hit my year's goal like back in like August or whatever, but I haven't
got new goal.
Got to the stretch goal.
Congratulations.
Keep stretch goal, and it's all good in the
Manus. Haven't you heard from Jack that you just need to make a plan? And you can get credit right then and there.
Yeah. Man, I press
the button.
The plan was I think it's key to lockdowns. Lockdowns need to be times of just dialing it way back. There's no,
because there's nothing else fucking happening. Like
you're not missing out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And granted, there have been days where it's like, oh, it'd be nice to have a few beers and watch the match or whatever. But like,
you can just watch the match.
You can just watch the match. You know, it's not worth breaking it just for that. Whereas, like, if there was, if there's something on, it's much harder. Like, I mean,
yeah, I getcha.
And don't get me wrong, like, December, when things are on, I'm going to go to them. I'm going to go Buck Wild, because that part of what's been keeping me going
on is the idea of December.
Just have I can have a good December. And then also knowing that, like, January is going to be what I always do in January. So it's not, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I'm sure all the actual alcoholics that for some reason still listen to our program are screaming at me going, no!
No,
man! Imagine what a shit program to listen to in general, but particularly if you're like on the wagon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, what a shit program to listen to sober. I'm just gonna
or drunk or high
or just what a shit program.
It's not that we don't it's not that we don't like our listeners or appreciate them. We just lose a bit of respect every time you tune into this.
I wouldn't want to be friends with anyone who would listen to a podcast with me on it.
Like, all those things I said to Jack about Nintendo Wii's and televisions are true of you, the listener. Go go watch Coronation Street.
I strive for us to be slightly better than Coronation Street. And I would say that 99 times out of 100, we don't hit that mark.
No, no, we don't. We almost.
But the one time we do. Which I guess
the one time that we're slightly better than
guys. That's the same week that Emmerdale has a fucking plane crash or something, and no one watches Curry anyway. That's what happens,
guys. I think this is episode 250.
Oh, we're a quarter of the way there. We said 1,000 episodes, no more, no less.
We did. We said or agreed to on penalty of something.
And if you listen up to this stage, dear listener, you're in it the rest of the way. And you can try and stop, it won't happen. It won't work.
It's very debatable as to whether this is episode 250. It is certainly not going to be the episode which is labelled 250, because that came out last week. Now, within that, we have the best of episode that we put out at the start of lockdown before we got our Zoom shit together.
Yeah,
so it's only been 249, but there's also the secret episode.
The secret episode, which we could never release.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what you can, we're anywhere between episode 159 and episode 151, depending on what way you want to count it. If you care about counting accurately. If not, we're just pick a number. We're on that.
We're on whatever. Like, what are we going to do? Tell you you're wrong? Probably not going to happen.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, well, that would involve them actually engaging with us, and other than Howard Helen, none of them do.
We can. Some people go. Some people.
Oh, the beer nut does.
Who, incidentally, can suck my dick?
Who?
Howard Helen.
Oh, can he?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
did he do something on you, or is it just like, hi,
no,
Howard?
No, I don't actually, to be honest, I actually feel like we've given him too much airtime.
Reasonable.
So he doesn't even get the benefit of an explanation.
The beers. Who wants to go first?
Sure. Like I said at the beginning, I think the best way to describe this beer is as an interesting beer. There was a bit too much coffee for me, as I said at the start. And underneath that, there was a really nice beer, really nice sort of, the salted caramel ice cream was there and it was delicious. It was just fighting to make itself known against the sort of overpowering first hit you get. So, like, I think I'm going to go with a 7, but it in a way doesn't feel like a proper 7. It's like better, it's better and worse than a 7 at the same time, and it just kind of averages out. Like, if you like coffee more than I do, this is probably amazing.
Do you have a certain sympathy, James, for the salted caramel ice cream portion of that beer, in that it's struggling for airtime against its louder and brasher friends? So, and it's subtler, more well thought out stuff doesn't get the room to breathe.
It's just a lot of bitter, aggressive.
Very good. J Money Worldwide.
Yeah, I quite like this. It's interesting. It's tasty. Like, here's the thing. If this had been like absolutely chock full of hooch, I think it would have got a higher score from me. I think it's like, it's an interesting flavor, but it's just that, I don't know. There's something missing from it for me. Maybe I just am inherently not a huge fan of what it's trying to do or something. For me, it's still really good. It's still a 7.5, but it doesn't reach that upper echelon of I want nothing but this for ages.
Yeah.
And you think it could get that if it was just a bit hoochier?
I think so. And I think the ones of these, it reminds me, like, if we had had this and it had been 7% on episode 3,
it
would have got the same reaction, if not a better one, you know?
Yeah.
I really like this. I think that the mouthfeel, the body, the flavor all really sit right with me. I might be wrong here. It might not be, like, I would maybe agree that it's not very well balanced, but it's not well balanced in favor of things I really like. So I'm gonna give it very fair. I think this is a tasty beer and like perfect for a cold winter evening where you're looking for like sweetness and stout. It's brilliant. So I'm gonna give it a 9, which I think gives it a final count score of 8.166666. Although I could be wrong.
I think it's 7. Did you both give it 7s?
I was 7. Jack was 7.5.
Okay, then Gavin's probably right. Let's not figure out the maths on this one. I'm sure the nerds will do that at home. Quick review for the classic Coke. If you haven't had like a full sugar Coke in a while, go have one. It's a dangerous habit to get into, and they're not very impressive when you have them all the time. If you rarely have them, Jesus.
I completely agree, Miles. I would rarely have soft drinks, but when I do, I always go for a classic Coke because, like, when you have them rarely, nothing does it like a classic Coke.
They're fantastic. So a 10 out of 10 for something that we don't review. There you go.
Are you going to start a different fucking program? The fine.
Yeah, Coke. And I'll bring all the talent with me. I'll be staying on this one, but I'll bring all the talent with me. Well, with that, there's only one thing to cheers to on this episode.
Oh, it's the one, the only, the man to Rube Waddell.
Rube Waddell.
Rube Waddell.
The craziest man in baseball. Or is he?
Or is he? We'll find out.
Yes.
The Final Countdown was brought to you by James Belfast, Jack Toner, Gavin Carberry, and Manus Cronin. Find us on social media at FAL Countdown or contact us directly on finalcountdown@gmail.com.